This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the 22nd episode of the Dunedin Otago Sister City Society podcast on Otago Access Radio. I'm your host today, Haruko Stewart, a member of the Sister City Society and a Japanese Senior Teaching Fellow of the Languages and Cultures at Otago University. I'm right here with today's fantastic guest, Dr. Mami Yamaguchi, a well-being clinical psychologist at Student Health in Otago. Mami, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. So you are a well-being psychologist, mm-hmm. clinical psychologist. Mm-hmm. Could you introduce a little bit? Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. So again, my name is Mami Yamaguchi. I was born in Kumamoto, Japan, and I was basically, of course, raised that entire whole my life for the first 22 years. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Tokyo to work, and I worked there about 4 years at a private company. Mm-hmm. And then I came to New Zealand, with a working holiday visa to, it was like a big OE to experience, mm-hmm. Overseas.
You need it sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. That was one of my dreams, to live overseas, not just, traveling or mm-hmm. visiting for the short term. Mm. So yeah, that's how I came to New Zealand in the first place in my mid-20s.
Great. Well, I'll ask you more about those things. Right. So you're from Kumamoto.
That's right.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Kumamoto? So whereabouts in Kumamoto are you from?
Yeah, so I was born in Kumamoto City in Kumamoto Prefecture and...
the capital city.
Yeah, mm. yeah, yeah. What can I tell you? I'm one of identical twins, so yes. I was born premature, and I was in the incubator for the first month of my life.
Oh, both of you together?
Yeah, my sister was placed in a different incubator, and she was there for 2 weeks, so I was there longer at the hospital. And but in terms of, development was just normal, I think, but I think we had a bit of, maybe at the beginning, maybe a bit of a hard time to catch up with our peers. But yeah.
Wow. Mm. So, I remember you are identical twins. That's uh-huh. fantastic. Do you got like a so-called twin telepathy together?
Yeah, that's interesting. Mm. We were just talking about it the other day. Mm-hmm. So I don't think personally we have that sort of like ability to, like a telepathy or anything like that. But if we are in the same room mm. and kind of seeing each other's faces, then it's quite easy for me to read my sister's, thoughts or feelings. Mm. So, probably other siblings might have the same thing.
I don't. I didn't, but you do.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, it's quite easy to read my sister's.
Maybe she feels like eating this for tonight, for dinner tonight. Or not that kind of thing.
Yeah,
or
some sort of like a mental, emotional, mental psychological reactions, mm. which, she may not necessarily express externally, mm. but... Yeah, because we've been so close, I can kind of read.
Yeah, at school she had a problem or something like that, and maybe, she feels a little bit depressed or a little down or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you can be just beside her and just kind of cheer her up. And that's great. So Kumamoto, I've never been to Kumamoto, but uh-huh. I really want to. Uh-huh. Kumamoto is famous for like ramen.
And
lotus roots.
Yep. Karashi renkon. So uh-huh. lotus root with, that not chili paste, what's it, the karashi?
Mustard
paste, kind of filled the hole. And also like, I think coated with some flour. And I don't know what's the yellow color. I don't think it's turmeric, but it's sort of like a deep fried. So outside.
Deep fried.
Yeah. Okay. So outside is also yellow. And then inside all the holes are also, you know, yellow because of the mustard paste.
Uh-huh.
Probably another thing famous in Kumamoto is basashi, which is the raw horse meat. but it's really delicacy. And
it's not like what you do eat every day.
And actually, that's right. And horse is actually, for meat, is almost like a different breed or a different creature. Yeah, almost like when my husband saw, the horse for meat, he said, wow, that they look like cow, really.
Yeah.
So it's not.
So you mean horses like in your everyday life and horses for eating, being eaten as a raw horse.
So they're quite,
are different.
Their physique is, of course, the food they are given is quite, I think, quite different from.
Are they given like beer, like cows?
I don't know what it is, but probably more like a fattening food, maybe.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, it's not, of course, everyday food, and it's just for special occasions we have it.
Lotus roots are like your everyday life food.
Again, it's not really everyday food. Oh. You can buy it quite easily from supermarkets and stuff. But I can't remember eating a lot growing up, just for special occasions like a New Year celebration or. I think that those are the times we eat those things. Yeah,
and it's famous for like tangerine, mandarin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, in fact, my paternal grandparents, used to grow mandarins. So they had a mountainside full of mandarin trees, and I remember as a child, helping to harvest some of the mandarins as well.
Oh, yeah. Great. Because, when we hear, like, mandarin, we kind of think about, like, Ehime Prefecture, those areas.
Yeah.
But I've been looking, checking the information on Kumamoto, and then I found that, they are actually famous for mandarin as well.
Yeah, so Kawachi Mikan is quite famous. My parents, they are local city was Uto, but there are lots of citrus trees as well, just not mandarins, but
other citrus fruit
as well. Yeah, what's with the really huge ones? Not Zabon.
I
forgot the name. It's really big, almost like a watermelon size.
Something pond.
Yeah.
Something pond.
Sometimes people call it like a zabon there's another name.
A kind of
for
citrus.
It. Yeah, yeah.
But it's huge like
it's
this.
It's really, really big. And,
and the color is?
Outside is green or yellow
like
green.
Like a cucumber then.
Yeah, a bit lighter green with a bit of a yellow.
Uh-huh.
And people, of course, inside, of course, you can eat the fresh fruits. But also near the... outside of like a skin, because skin is so thick with white, very soft inside. So people make pickles or some special, putting a lot of sugar and some special kind of desserts.
It's a Kumamoto thing as well.
Could be. I'm not sure. Maybe Kyushu.
Well, and how about ramen? Sorry.
Yeah, ramen.
I want to hear about
tons
that.
Tons of ramen. So we have like a lot of tonkotsu ramen, but also all the other niboshi ramen, shoyu ramen, shio ramen.
A lot of kinds. That is your everyday life kind of food, right?
Yeah, ramen is.
Your soul food.
That's right. One of them, one of the brand or name of the ramen called Umakachan. Probably you don't know, you haven't seen.
It rings a bell, okay. but I don't think I've ever eaten that.
Yeah, that's the kind of instant noodle with tonkotsu base.
Oh, like our Kanto areas, like what, like Sapporo Ichiban brands.
Yeah.
So that is a Kumamoto brand.
Yeah.
Umakachan.
Umakachan.
Okay,
yeah.
I remember that. Do you miss that sometimes?
Actually, not much, because I prefer Korean instant noodles.
Oh, Shin ramen.
Yeah, I quite like spicy stuff. So
that's right. Yeah, so Kumamoto people not really spicy food people.
Depends, but not really. Mm. I don't think we eat a lot of spicy food.
But you like spicy food.
Yeah, I love spicy food.
Okay, so you prefer Shin ramen to umakachan. But I want to give it a try. Mm. Okay, so so Kumamoto has got actually 1.67 million people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very big city.
It is. Yeah. It's not that small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when you were little with your lovely identical twin sister. Uh-huh. So she is an elder sister.
Yeah, just half an hour.
Yeah. Wow, that's short. So you were raised together and like played, hung out together quite a lot.
Yeah.
Went to the same school.
That's right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So
what was she like and what were you like? I'm sure you were very different.
Yeah, our temperament was quite different from a young age.
Oh.
And she's very considerate and kind and generous and...
Which you are, too.
I'm more like a... what do you call it? I guess I was more... extroverted. I don't know, maybe not really. When we were young, I think both of us were quite shy and more kind of slightly introverted maybe. I was more I didn't really worry about serving others.
Well, mommy, you were little, very little. Yeah. You were a child. Yeah. Don't worry about that yet.
Yeah, it's funny thing is we used to go to my cousin's place for sleepovers and stuff, during summer.
Yeah.
And I remember my sister, often said after dinner and, oh, mommy, we should clean up. We should, help them to tidy up or something. And I was going, huh?
I still want to do, I don't know, play and just go outside and do whatever.
And as twins, people used to give kind of the same gifts, but in different colors, like a red
and
typical, pink.
That's typical, yes.
And quite often we wanted the same color.
Oh.
And then my parents, my mom used to say, okay, then do janken pon, paper, scissors, rock to decide which gets which. And then if I didn't get the one I liked, I sort of felt quite, bad. And my sister quickly, used to say, oh, it's okay. Mommy, you can have the one you like. I don't mind. And
your sister is an angel.
I know. So looking back, I feel quite bad.
Okay,
I feel
in that sense. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I feel quite guilty about it. So she was always like that. Very
don't
kind
worry,
and,
kind of.
Yeah,
yeah,
considerate.
Just do whatever
and,
you want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
I'm that kind of selfish one.
No, that's a very, kids thing to do, No. You are very thoughtful, too.
Yeah, that's what I think, of our childhood. That's the kind of contrast, we had in terms of personalities.
That's interesting. Mm. So you were both shy first, and then you got a little bit more active. And at school, primary school and junior high school, did you belong to a club?
Yeah, so... what's that? Sort of like a school club I used to, we have like a within school and also like a outside of school.
Yeah.
So what I used to do is I used to do abacus.
Oh.
So that's like a four times a week lessons.
That many times.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And initially I was also doing piano as well. So it was really hard to kind of do both, because one day a week, I think on Thursday, piano lesson and abacus lesson kind of coincided. So I had to go to school, two classes or two lessons after school. So eventually I quit piano and then focused on abacus.
Sounds very, very familiar to me.
Yeah.
At that time, that was like the best combination, golden combination of going to an abacus school and piano school.
Yeah.
That was the best kind of duo kind of that a lot of people did.
And at school, I belonged to like a badminton club or dance, like a folk dance kind of, you know, club.
Yeah.
And so it's not like a hip hop, but it's more like a
for campfire kind of
thing. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Kind of like a traditional, like old fashioned American
people. Yeah.
So I quite enjoyed it.
Okay.
So maybe that's how kind of my love for movement or dance maybe started.
So sounds like even just listening to your clubs that you used to belong to, you sound like you were very active.
My parents were quite active. They always, you know, played something like a volleyball. My mom used to play volleyball, and my dad used to play ground tennis or indoor tennis, and we also played a bit of indoor tennis with them, and always playing badminton outside and dodgeball outside, and because we used to live in apartment blocks, one of the apartment blocks. My dad worked for Japanese railway.
Okay.
So there were so many apartment blocks for
railway
employees and their families. So we were basically surrounded by lots of families, about probably 80 or more families.
Wow. That's kind of one town.
Yeah. It's just a wee community. And so we had a lot of like kids, you know, living around and similar age. And so it was really nice environment to be brought up in. And I, you know, we had so many kind of, you know, adults who kept an eye on us, and I remember one of the neighbors, I could just pop in, you know, after school, even without my parents being there, and it was really, really nice. I just had communication with one of them lately, and
they helped each other, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So kind of good old days, kind of a lot of people did that.
Yeah, like almost like a wee tiny village raising kids
during the Showa era.
That's right. Yeah,
it's a very Showa thing. And you could borrow soy sauce if you run out of it. The community was really tighter, like closer to each other. Their relationship was really close. Great time. Great. So, and then so at the time, what kind of subjects at school did you used to kind of enjoy learning?
So I quite like, you know, math, because I think partly because I was doing abacus, I was really quick, and I was kind of, you know, probably priding myself for quick kind of, you know, thinking and doing math and so forth. And maybe junior high, that's when we, you know, started learning English, and I quite liked that too. But I'm always interested in, like, maybe in high school, I got really into kind of like a Japanese literature and books. And
for example, novelists?
Novelists. I read so many books. Starting in primary school, I was reading a lot of Edogawa Rampo.
Oh, wow.
That's I started in primary
Detective
school.
Detective stories?
So I really liked that, like his books. And then Akagawa Jiro.
You are mystery girls.
And
both of you? like just you like these things or
no? I think my like sister.
I remember your sister's name, Rumi.
Rumi. Yeah, I think
used
she
used to like those too.
Yeah, I think so, because my mom, she's a really a bookworm, and she used to take us to different libraries, you know, even a small kind of community library as well since we are young. So we are always surrounded by books, and you know, she used to read books to us every night, and yeah, I think that's how you know, the love for books started.
Yeah.
And yeah. So books are always something I
cherish. Yeah, you still like reading a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, during high school, at junior high, initially I became interested in psychology and I really wanted to study psych.
That's the time.
I was advised by one of the education gakken. Do you know, like gakken person? He said something, oh, well, maybe psychology isn't something for girls and women. And my parents, I think they imagined like a, you know, those scary movies, you know, Psycho. do you remember those movies?
Well, what are they?
There was the movies about
American Psycho.
It was about like
it about psychology?
About a person was, you know, mental health, mental illness, and
is it a Hollywood movie?
She had this dissociative identity disorder, you know, used to be called multiple personality disorder. And she, you know, she became quite violent when one personality took over, and you know, something like that.
Oh my goodness!
And I think that's the kind of image my parents had in terms of, you know, studying psychology.
Well, at that time, everybody had that kind of image.
Yeah,
about that.
So kind of extreme end of you know, treating people with really significant mental illnesses, and parents thought, oh no, then you might see the dark side of, you know, humans, and then you may not you know, trust others or get married, and
they were worried.
They were worried. So I thought, oh well, and so that's the kind of, you know, that during junior high, that's the kind of impression I was given about psychology. And then during high school, I got more interested in more like Japanese literature. And then I really wanted to, you know, one day I wanted to become an author, you know, writing books. So that was, again...
Well, you've achieved your dreams and everything. Yeah. I mean, you have written a lot of books, which I was going to talk about. Well, so, you know, I've been looking forward to having this interview with you for a long time, because I've got so many things I want to ask you. So I don't know, maybe another time. I mean, I'm planning to have an episode one and episode two, but in the future, maybe we'll have episode three, four.
But
really, so I will talk about your beautiful books later. But so it was very early for you to get interested in your future career, you know, like jobs, like psychology.
So the funny thing is, so after that junior high, you know, like conversations with my parents and so forth, I thought like a sort of like a the dream of, you know, studying psychology was kind of put to the back burner. So it was there, but it wasn't really it didn't really reach. I wasn't really thinking of becoming a psychologist or anything at that time. And then once I graduated university in Japan, and then started.
Did you major in literature?
My major was Japanese literature, and at that time, I really kind of wanted to get a job in a publishing field. You know, like one of the publishers, and. So, yeah, I, you know, went to Tokyo to try to get...
A Tokyo debut.
Try to get some interviews.
Did you go there with Rumi together or separately?
No, no, I was...
She stayed in Kumamoto?
Yeah, she was... her, you know, career choice was becoming a public servant. in Japan, Komin. Mm. So she was...
Yeah, it's called security.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, she focused on that. Uh-huh. And I was more... Yeah,
good on her. Like, that's good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. She knew what she wanted to do.
Mm. So I was a bit more like looking at different publishers, et cetera. But as you know, it was such a high competitive, you know, field. And in the end, I got a job from a company which had a publishing department.
Uh-huh.
So the initial promise was, oh, okay, if you come to Tokyo, then, you know, you can work in our publishing department.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got the job and went to Tokyo, I was placed in a completely different department.
Oh, really? They told you a lie.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the company was more providing education for all the different certificates or Shihoshoshi, you know, lawyer.
Qualifications.
Yeah,
that's so great.
Like Gyosei Shoshi and Taken and so forth. So,
textbooks and all
that's
those
right.
things
yeah.
for
yeah.
Taking those qualification exams to pass them.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So it's even if I was placed in a publishing department, it's not like a you know, fictional books or non-fiction.
It's more like it's an more, educational
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, more yeah. textbooks kind of, okay. you know. So.
A good company, I'm sure they are. But it was not quite what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's right.
So you worked for them for how many years?
Yeah,
four years?
Nearly 4 years. Mm-hmm. And... Before I came to New Zealand,
Oh, that's great. Mm. So, of course, I'm sure your lovely sister Rumi really supported what you wanted to do. So she stayed in Kumamoto, but you went to Tokyo. So what else can you remember about your exciting Tokyo life?
Yeah, I really enjoyed living in Tokyo because, as you know, Haruko, Tokyo is not just like those, you know, skyscrapers and very busy kind of, you know, busy, what you call those big, you know, areas like Shibuya and Shinjuku, Harajuku. And if you travel a bit outskirts of Tokyo or downtown of Tokyo, there are so many interesting places there.
Oh, yes. I love Tokyo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a lot of suburban area as well. Mm. Yeah, and you'll be surprised that it's in Tokyo. It's actually quiet with a lot of shrines and nature.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So I enjoyed cycling around Tokyo. You know, at that time, I didn't have any cell phone, iPhone, or no Google Maps.
Know.
So I really relied on, you know, paper version of maps. But I really enjoyed it. It felt like, there are so many interesting things. Mm. And over there, actually, I went to a school called... Shikisai Gakko, which is about learning this connection between people's psyche, people's mind, and the colors. And
sounds interesting.
Yeah, the founder of Shikisai Gakko, Suenaga Sensei, he studied a lot of course, artists all over the world, but also he sort of like taught kids and he studied children's art, and he really noticed how children express their, you know, feelings and emotions and unspoken thoughts on their art. So it was really one of the painting, created by a young child, like a 5-year-old boy. We were shown, and the boy painted, you know, family members and including him. And if I remember correctly, I think his shoes, like feet, were really painted in a really big, but in a dark kind of black color.
Oh.
And showing like the heaviness he carried inside.
Oh.
Yeah. So lots of so you could, you know, you could really study people's paintings, including kids, and then really understand what they are going through. So that was really fascinating.
So you were still thinking about somewhere in your mind about psychology.
Think so. I've been, you know, I was always interested in people and people's, you know, how people's minds work. Partly because I'm one of identical twins, but my sister and I are quite different, you know. So it's really kind of made me kind of think, so what really clicks, you know, kind of people? What's the kind of mechanism of our minds and how they work similarly or differently? And what sort of factors influence that? So I think I've been always interested in people and their minds.
Yeah, great. I mean, you had never given up on your dreams. Went to a publishing company, but you decided to go to that color analysis, but not for fashion, like for more serious, like kids' mentality and those things. So I think you decided to go there because somewhere here in your mind, you still were thinking about it. Did you realize that, that's really what I want to do at that stage, or it's a little bit later when you realize that?
No, I think I always, you know, wanted to do something around that. And and so part of the school, we had to work on a project, in a group project. And I remember creating, you know, with a group of us, probably four or five of us in the group. And then we decided to do surveys about, you know, like how certain colors are linked to their different experiences, such as, you know, experiencing heartbreak or, you know, breakup in terms of relationships or... And so I, you know, we did a bit of like a kind of psychological, you know, study and research. And, you know, because questionnaires are something we, you know, we often use. So I think I dipped in, you know, some of the work already, and it was really fun to do.
Was it like a culture school type of school? Because you were working at the same time,
right? So it was like a completely run by private company, Shikisai Gakko. And so they are still running in Tokyo, in Aoyama.
Flashy area.
I was we were the kind of ninth cohort. So I'm sure they are still running. The school was, you know, quite really interesting. They really taught us a variety of things.
Was it like a 3-month course or a 6-month course?
I think it was probably around 6 months, if not a year.
Like once a week.
And you know, at that time, it was quite a big investment for me because, you know, I was just working and living on my own in Tokyo. But I think I really kind of felt passionate about, you know, learning that. So, yeah. So, again, you know, that sort of opportunity was there because I was in Tokyo.
Not in Kumamoto?
No, I don't think so. Especially with that caliber of, you know, Suenaga Tamio Sensei is, you know, someone who is really, really known in that particular field. So, you know, being taught by someone like him, if I were in Kumamoto, probably
I know what you mean. I mean, Kumamoto is fantastic, but after all, Tokyo is Tokyo, right? Yeah, it's got everything.
That's right. Exactly.
So he's a psychologist?
I don't really know what his background is, but he's certainly got a lot of expertise in arts. And if he wasn't a psychologist, he's certainly one of the I think top figures studying arts and the relationship between arts and psychology.
Wow. So it was very interesting for you.
It was. And the people I met there as well.
Oh, yes. What kind of people were they? Like from different kinds of jobs and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. From different walks of life and different age group and But people, you know, who are genuinely interested in minds and colors and, mm-hmm. you know, looking at people's psyche from, you know, slightly different mm-hmm. different perspectives. Yeah, it was really stimulating for me to yeah. meet those people. Yeah, we did a lot of different things together too. I remember one of the things we did was in going outside just uh-huh. near Tama River,
oh.
and then we took the face paintings and stuff like that, and uh-huh. then in the nature we colored our face in different colors,
yes.
and then how that kind of, you know, seeing your face in different colors such as orange or yellow or brown, or, and how that kind of may you know that how that impacts your mind, mm. you know.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
So. Well, Eva, you just hung out, but with what you're learning,
yeah.
still not just
yeah.
drinking, just not doing anything.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, you were doing a project.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it was really kind of hands-on experience, mm-hmm. and also I learned about, you know, in Japan during certain era,
uh-huh.
the common people weren't allowed to wear colorful. Mm. clothes, so they were only allowed to wear certain, like this brown or a gray or mm-hmm. Blue.
Mm-hmm.
So they have actually so many different names for the different shades of brown
of
or
course.
Gray or blue,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
and that's the kind of, you know, the names of colors are something we probably don't hear anymore, but really, and I can't remember each, you know, what's mm-hmm. that, but. Really nice to kind of, you know, understand Japanese culture in that way,
mm-hmm.
because that's the kind of, you know, keen eyes, mm-hmm. you know, Japanese people, especially kind of old, you know, our ancestors used to have,
yeah.
for really minute, nuanced, you uh-huh. know, different shade of different
yes.
colors. And I heard something, if you don't know the names uh-huh. for different colors,
yeah.
actually you can't see it. You can't differentiate.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
yeah.
But if you know the actual names,
yes.
then you can see the difference.
Yeah.
So it's like almost like a becoming color sensitive
mm-hmm.
and highly, you know,
yeah.
becoming aware, right? So
you were saying a very good thing, Mommy, because I really think during the Heian era, mm-hmm. you know, aristocratic era, they used to have 12 layers of kimono colors,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they did know actually different shades of colors.
Yeah.
And we do have yeah. such beautiful colors, different mm-hmm. kinds of colors, even
yeah.
one blue, it's a different, a few or maybe several, some different
yeah.
kinds of blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we used to have that sense.
That's right. And
yeah.
actually, you know, the same thing applies to, uh-huh. to our feelings and emotions as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you just know words about, like, you know, in terms of feelings, which is like good or
uh-huh.
bad,
yeah.
then it's really hard to, of course, you know, articulate, but also experience mm. this nuanced feelings and
yeah.
emotions. So, you know, part of, maybe later on we will talk about this, but
uh-huh.
part of my job is
uh-huh.
to, like, teach people
uh-huh.
to how to identify
yeah.
their own emotions
mm-hmm.
and really kind of knowing, you know, like broadening their emotional vocabulary, so
mm-hmm.
that kind of, it's called like emotional flexibility,
yeah.
and that the words are really important in that way.
I totally
yeah.
agree. I mm. mean, as a language teacher too, mm-hmm. I don't say anything bad about, like, you know, I don't deny, like, the, you know, young people's vocabulary of, like, saying yabai for everything.
Mm.
I don't put it down or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
while I'm teaching Japanese vocab and everything, I want my students to learn different kinds of words about mm. showing, expressing their feelings, just like what you've just said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yabai yeah. cannot be replaced for every single feeling.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
But how do you feel? Like, you know,
yeah.
I want to know, and just yabai, yabai for even mm. these days for positive things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a negative meaning nuance, but
mm.
now we can use it for a positive thing as well. And I'm like, okay, I mean, I don't put it down, but you can mm. use it, but please use other
yeah.
words as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think we have this innate need to express ourselves and to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you can articulate what's really going on and happening inside, then of course there's a high likelihood of being understood well.
Yeah.
And that leads to better regulation as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why, you know, like knowing words and those, you know, very, you know, sometimes quite minute but nuanced, you know, words, the knowledge of that is really, really powerful in that way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been thinking about that, like always, you know, I mean, we want to know, like, more accurately.
Yeah.
Yeah, how you feel and how you want to express yourselves, like, about anything. So I totally agree. So, that's actually the next topic, like, we can talk about in episode two, but why not? I mean, we just, you know, go with the flow.
Yeah, sure.
So we can talk about that because it's so interesting, so I don't want to stop you from talking about this. Mm-hmm. So do you use what you learned at school for your current job as well?
Yeah.
Directly, indirectly?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is, you know, what I do and I use for my work is really accumulation of everything I've learned, and not just from books, not from just from, you know, clinical training, but all the, of course, life experiences, and including the shikisai gakko, you know, the things I learned from there is... I utilize everything in that way.
Mm-hmm. So when you do have a counseling session with your students, with our students, we work for Otago University, and you are at Student Health Center, do you ask them how they feel, you know, by using different words, like... to describe how they exactly feel at that time when you see them?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, feeling and emotions are the very important component. Mm-hmm. You know, people, including students, need to be aware.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, some students have difficulty in really, you know, describing what they are feeling. So what I have in my office is this a chart called the emotion chart.
Mm.
And it's sort of diagram of, you know, is it called like a consecutive circle? So inside the inside, you know, the first circle, they have really kind of basic sort of core emotions such as sad, angry, afraid, and disgust, and surprise, and
with
so
colors.
Forth. Yeah, yeah, and then next. The adjacent circle, outer circle, they have more like, you know, more kind of nuanced expression of sad and so forth. So show them and I'll show it to them or, you know, give them the handout and then let them just follow the chart and then really kind of point, you know, the exact words that describe how they feel.
Uh-huh.
And, and I encourage them to kind of like utilize those charts to understand what they are really
feeling. They've got to understand how they feel themselves first, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, they're kind of like, I don't know, down, but okay, so why? Why am I down?
Yeah, another reason why I want them to have those emotional vocabulary is because when they try to label their emotions, what they are doing is actually they are activating or they're using the prefrontal cortex, which is a part of the brain, it's sort of executive functioning of our brain, and it has this regulatory, you know, capacity to regulate our emotions.
Mm.
So by really kind of, you know, them trying to label their emotions in words, they are learning how to regulate their emotions, which is the key for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you can't regulate your emotions, you know, self-regulation, then what happens is when they feel so stressed mm-hmm. or overwhelmed, mm-hmm. they get dysregulated.
I see.
Know? Yeah.
So to regulate their feelings is like mm-hmm. you have to live with that,
yep.
but
yep.
it's under control.
Yeah, sort of like I think for regulation, it's really you need to be able to really kind of understand mm-hmm. what you are feeling
yeah.
and being able to name it mm. and label it in mm-hmm. words. And then in that way, they can really, you know, by doing that, they sort of like they distance themselves from emotions in a healthy way
yeah.
so that they can actually stay with their emotions rather yeah. than being taken over or being overwhelmed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you can be kind of objective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sort of in a healthy way. So, uh-huh. you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe slightly objective, but also you are feeling the feelings, you uh-huh. know, viscerally.
Yeah.
So you feel those sensations, uh-huh. Which can be very unpleasant.
Yeah.
But you feel like you can stay with those emotions because emotions are temporary.
Mm.
You know, they are not going to stay with you forever.
Mm-hmm.
But what we tend to do mm-hmm. is when we face something unpleasant, mm-hmm. including our emotions, we tend to push it away or run away from it or try to block it
mm-hmm.
or distract ourselves. And all those kind of defenses come in.
Mm-hmm.
But those defenses are actually the problem, mm-hmm. not the emotions themselves.
I see. Because mm-hmm. it's natural for everyone to get those feelings in our lives, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And emotions are so important to us
yes.
because they carry very important messages for us. For
uh-huh.
example, like anger.
Uh-huh.
Anger is something we feel uh-huh. when our personal boundary is invaded, right?
Oh.
Or, you know, someone... Our safety uh-huh. is under threat. You know, that's uh-huh. when we feel anger.
I see. So it's like an alert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anger uh-huh. is a sort of like a self-affirming feeling. So, mm-hmm. you know, you with anger, that's kind of energy, right? So it's like an energy you need to protect yourself and also important others. So with anger,
uh-huh.
actually you can assert yourself,
uh-huh.
you know, to say to others, hey, you're actually crossing this personal boundary. I don't, you know, please stay out of this.
Uh-huh.
Or if necessary, you might, you know, say it more with force. But without anger, We can't protect ourselves or important others.
I see.
Yeah.
Wow. So anger is not a bad thing.
No, not at all. As long as
we can kind of, I don't know, put it under
yeah.
control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
to live with it.
Yeah, yeah. People often feel uncomfortable with anger because sometimes people equate anger with aggression,
yeah.
which is not the same thing, right? And also anger is something we are... either explicitly or implicitly told it's not a good feeling, it's mm-hmm. a bad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So as a child, especially if our parents couldn't accept our anger, then we learn to suppress our anger and regarding it as something really bad, something we need to suppress or avoid.
Yeah. Right?
But anger, because it's an important emotion and it carries, you know, strong message for us
mm-hmm.
and it's energy, you know, emotion is energy in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you suppress or repress such powerful emotion, then they have to go somewhere. They have to, you know, be released or expressed in some way. And for some people, it's like anger, repressed anger can start attacking them, their body from within.
Oh,
right?
I see.
Yeah, that's
why. So you have to release it at some point.
Yeah. We have to process it.
Mm.
Yeah, and if it needs expression,
mm-hmm.
we need to learn how to express it in a constructive way.
Mm. That is very interesting. So it's good. It's not really good to feel angry, but we all do. So when we do, actually, we should know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And you are helping them to make them kind of possible to deal with it.
And the interesting is, you know, I also used to not, I think probably I used to, you know, suppress, repress anger because, you know, brought up in Japan, in Japanese culture, you know, especially for girls, so women to express anger is not something really, you know, well accepted or even, you know, nurtured, of course. So now I really see that in my client, and especially when they say, I don't really feel angry, you know, like I don't get mad. And that's an indicator that they learned. That's an emotional learning they experienced to suppress anger early on.
Okay, wow. That's very interesting, Mommy. Yeah. Wow. So when you see your clients at Student Health Center, do you see them like you've got an appointment like for 30 minutes, 1 hour, or depends?
Yeah. Our appointment is generally 45 to 50 minutes.
Okay.
And so it can be a bit of a challenge to, you know, sort of squeeze everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
And at Student House, because we provide only brief intervention, which means up to 6 sessions per student.
Oh.
So, you know, some students, of course, you know, 6 sessions are enough for them to get over or, you know, overcome whatever they are struggling with. But quite often, you know, 6 sessions are almost like a starting point.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, if the problem is very serious, especially.
Yeah. So my hope for, you know, a lot of students is to kind of experience this brief intervention as something almost really kind of that opportunity to start learning about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, therapy we do, or I do at Student Health is really, I try to go in quite deep.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, students are ready, clients are ready. Because, you know, just treating, how can I say it? Like, you know, just treating symptoms and managing symptoms is, of course, you know, it's helpful, but it doesn't really go deep enough. Because what happens is when some other stressors come in to their life, and then probably those symptoms crop up again, you know,
and they have to
do the same thing. They have to keep on applying those, you know, coping strategies. I try to kind of find if we can try to find root causes of, you know, whatever difficulties they are experiencing, so that, you know, they don't need to keep on applying whatever tools or strategies they learn. I mean, tools, strategies, they have, you know, of course, their place, and it's good to have a lot of tools in your toolkit, but that's the only thing they have, then it's like you have to keep on using it, you know, for the rest of your life, which is not really ideal.
But 6 sessions could be very useful for a lot of people. If the issue is a little bit more serious, can they apply for another 6 session, or always just 6 sessions per person?
Yeah, at the Student Health, basically that's the kind of limit, and that's for academic year, and it's got to reset every year. So I have quite a few students who, you know, comes back the following year, then continue
sessions. For new year.
Yeah, every year.
For every year you can have 6 sessions.
Yeah, so I have some student, you know, I saw 12 sessions or more because of the, you know, consecutive years. They come back. And, and, you know, of course, there are some other, you know, free therapy sessions out there or counseling sessions out there. But if people really want to engage long term, then I encourage them to apply for disability allowance through StudyLink to get some funding. It's not really, it doesn't cover the whole private cost, but or sometimes their parents are willing to support them in that way. But it can be a challenge for, of course, for some students to continue engage in long-term therapy.
Must be very hard for them. I mean, in such a harsh world these days, I really feel sorry for my students as well. As you know, after COVID, there has been more students who actually tell me that they've got mental illnesses or not that serious yet, but like they've got problems. And of course I want to support as much as I can, but it's actually happening right now even more than before. Did you notice that too?
We are also noticing the increase in the number of students who come to us, and also sometimes the complexity and the severity of that their condition. And I work in private practice once a week as well. It's not just only, of course, students, but adults as well.
I mean, internationally, I mean, even in Japan, I read an articles about mental illness is increasing.
Because I guess, you know, we live in this kind of uncertain world and a lot of volatility and, unpredictability is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's quite hard, you know, when I think as humans, we always kind of seek certainty and the predictability to feel safe.
Yeah.
And when those are not in the environment, and then, of course, we naturally feel quite unsafe,
anxious,
insecure.
Well, it's really almost time to say sayonara, but don't worry, we've got another episode. So we'll have, we'll talk about your current jobs and maybe past jobs and your psychology study, PhD at university. A lot of things, we're going to talk about them. So, but thank you very much. It was a little serious topic, but still, I've had a lot of fun with you, Mami. So thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Thank you.
And dear listeners, thank you so much for staying tuned with us until the very end this evening. I hope you have a wonderful week. 最後までお聞きくださりありがとうございました。またね、待ては、see you soon.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.